Welcome to The Agenda with local newsmakers and community leaders. Here's your host, Dave Bernstein.
All right. Thanks to State Senator Brad Hawkins for joining us today. We'll get you for a whole hour. I know that we've had some half-hour visits during the short 60-day session. Session is over, and so we want to do a little bit of a recap. So, Senator Hawkins, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Dave. It's great to be in studio with you.
So what's your assessment? Short 60-day session. I saw one article in the Seattle Times that said the Republicans feel like they defended well as the minority party in both houses.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, it's a short session. The state of Washington alternates between longer sessions when we're first developing the state's two-year budgets and shorter sessions when we're supposed to just be making modest adjustments and fine-tuning to those previously approved budgets. And I believe that's essentially what occurred. We did have some additional revenue flowing into the state, some excess capital gains revenue, this Climate Commitment Act, and some of these other additional funds. But for the most part, it was adjustments to the budgets, not new enhancements and a lot of those things. So we got in and out. We had these initiatives that came to the legislature too. That was kind of a big focus. But I'd say the budget updates and the three initiatives that passed and the ones that didn't, you know, that was kind of that dominated most of the discussion.
We'll get to the six citizens initiatives. Three go into effect in 90 days. Three more mm-hmm. come to the ballot. We'll get to those a little later on in the hour. I want to talk about some bills that you brought to the Senate. And also, let's get to some of your votes. No on the operating budget adjustments. What didn't you like?
Well, I don't necessarily think that the operating budget adjustments were terrible, but the underlying budget, I believe, spends too much. So I voted against the two-year operating budget last year. It was a $69 billion budget, but now with the increase, it's almost $72 billion. And I think the state of Washington spends to the edge. And what a lot of the budget forecasters are anticipating is that revenues are expected to sort of flatten out, maybe not decline, but flatten out. And then when you have other cost escalations sort of assumed in the budget and growing caseloads and different things, then the state of Washington could very well be in a situation in future years, if revenues do flatten out, that we would have to make significant cutbacks. Also, in the operating budget, there's a lot of assumptions. For example, the capital gains tax revenues factored into the operating budget, some of the Climate Commitment Act dollars, some of those other initiatives that we'll probably get a chance to talk about. Some of those revenues are sort of assumed in the budget, and I don't know that those are going to be maintained in future years. I did vote for the Senate operating budget proposal as a supplement. I thought the Senate put together a very good, modest supplemental kind of update to the budget. But when it came back after the House and Senate negotiators, you know, it spent another $300 million. And I didn't feel comfortable with the cash reserve balance for the most part on the operating budget. Now with the transportation and capital budget, I did vote for those, and I feel for good reasons.
Yeah, let's go to the capital budget. There were a couple things that I had jotted down. There's some money in the capital budget for Wenatchee Valley Technical Skills Center to help folks that that work in Leavenworth that need to be able to afford to live in Leavenworth. So I want to touch on that. And also for our Eastmont bond could be enhanced with some matching funds, and also for the regional sports complex. So tell us about these highlights of the capital budget.
Yeah, the capital budget is really a great budget. It's the one where when the two parties, there's kind of a lopsided balance of power because there is a bond vote in and a supermajority sort of threshold. There's a forced bipartisanship with the capital budget. So sometimes that's why you hear the support and the balance across legislative districts. It's because both parties are truly at the table to negotiate the budget, which hopefully in future years for the other budgets, you know, there'll be kind of more balance in the legislature as well. But for the capital budget, there was a significant focus on K-12 school facilities. The Skill Center was a great opportunity for us. That's a facility that's regionally supported. You know, a lot of the students throughout the region benefit from the Wenatchee Valley Technical Skills Center, where students can learn technical job skills. But it's administered by Wenatchee School District, and it received $14.5 million in this budget. It was one of those programs where it was scheduled and kind of ranked high and could have been funded, but we really did have to fight for it. And so I'm really grateful that we got that funding across the finish line. The affordable housing project was just an opportunity that I came up sort of part of the way through the session. That's a $1.3 million project to complete in some affordable rental housing opportunities in Leavenworth. And the Upper Valley Mend is an organization that's been working really hard on that along with the city of Leavenworth. So when this opportunity came up, I said, oh, it sounds like maybe we could do a little bit more with housing in this session, because I knew the capital budget was going to be tight. But when that opportunity came up for housing, I contacted Kaylin Bettinger and Mayor Flory up in Leavenworth and others, and I just kind of started, hey, can you come up with a request? Can we get this project going and get it submitted? It was that particular project was one that the state funded $1 million last year, and the county put up some funds, the city of Leavenworth as well, and a lot of private contributions. But then this $1.3 million this year in the capital budget helps get that project across the finish line. So really excited about that. And then what is interesting is that there is a program within the state capital budget called the School Construction Assistance Program. And it is matching grants from the state to local school districts for the local school districts whose communities approve their school construction bonds at 60%. And for the first time since 2003, the legislature in this budget used some of the excess revenues that we had through capital gains that must have been, were required to have been spent on school facilities. And we significantly increased the matching fund allocation to these school districts. So for example, under previous law or current law, it was $271 per square foot. It was the formula that school districts would be eligible for receiving in state matching funds. But this increase in this budget, soon to be signed by Governor Inslee, increases it from $271 to $375 per square foot. And it's only sort of a temporary increase because it may not be authorized again. So the budget is only available for the next year and a half until June 30th of 2025. But coincidentally, Eastmont School District is running their third attempt at their school bond this April, I believe. And they are getting scheduled to get some matching funds through that. So presumably for what the projects that the facilities that would qualify, Eastmont School District could receive substantially more matching funds from the state if the community approves the bond in April.
All right. Yeah. Well, last month it fell, I think I did the math, 36 votes short of passing. And I know the Eastmont School District decided, let's strike while the issue is fresh in everyone's mind, and we'll see what happens. I think it's April 19th, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. The special election next special election calendar date. After that, they'd have to maybe wait again until November.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the
calendar works out.
Yeah, but I knew once the negotiated capital budget sort of was made public, one of my first calls was to Becky Berg at Eastmont, and I said, you may not realize this, but this is my understanding of what this budget allocation matching fund increase could mean, and it's, you know, could be something that's very beneficial for Eastmont. So kind of the third time's a charm, or timing's everything, some of those terminologies are kind of thrown around. But I think the Eastmont School District folks are really encouraged by that, because what it essentially means, as I understand it, is that if the community approves the bond in April, it could make those community dollars essentially go further because they're receiving more state match. So,
and we're talking with State Senator Brad Hawkins. We're going to do kind of a recap of the legislative session. Finally, on the capital budget, there's like $300,000 available for some of the site evaluation work. The regional sports complex is still under study. No decisions have been made, but still to kind of come up with all the facts. This would be specifically to evaluate a site?
Yeah, I'm really so proud of the various local government entities that have joined forces to work together to thoughtfully study the possibilities of a regional sports complex. The group had chipped in $300,000 to study it. And this is Chelan County, Douglas County, City of Wenatchee City, East Wenatchee, the regional port. And I think the existing public facilities district all chipped in funds to study this. And I think the study process is sort of winding down on what facilities they may want. And then the question is, well, where could they locate the facilities? And so there's a whole thought process associated with carefully considering where those facilities could go, what infrastructure is available, the transportation elements and all those things associated with that. So I sponsored the funding to the Chelan Douglas Regional Port Authority for presumably the next phase of the study group's process, which would be looking at feasible sites and possibilities and the whole process for where that could be located. And then there will also be an extensive effort by the study group and the regional port to share information with the public as well. Anytime you have multiple jurisdictions involved with something cooperative like this, it's sometimes a challenge to make sure information is getting out accurately. And it's not just, for example, we're just talking about Eastmont School District. They can send out a newsletter about their bond issue to all their locals and kind of explain it. Well, in this case with the regional sports complex, if it does move forward, you know, there will be lots of potential entities involved in it, which makes it exciting, but also makes it kind of challenging. But I think evaluating the location or possible locations is going to take some effort. And I believe that will be the next phase of the study process.
All righty. And before we go to break, let's talk about the transportation budget. You voted yes on that. When it comes to transportation around here, we're all, you know, kind of wondering about, you know, what ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching on the Wenatchee Confluence Parkway project. Sure. The prices keep going up. What happened on that front in terms of the transportation budget? Is it a case of trying to preserve funding for anything specific around here? Or what can you tell us in terms of the transportation budget and here in the 12th District?
Yeah, well, the state supplemental transportation budget I did vote for, it was essentially a continuation of current projects and the maintenance and preservation of our system. The legislature did approve a major package back in 2022, which was scheduled and finalized in 2023, just last session, that did fund Confluence Parkway at $85 million over the next 6 years. So that funding is preserved. And that $85 million from the state will match the federal infra grant that was received that I know Congresswoman Schreier was very involved in. There have been cost escalations on many projects throughout the state for a variety of factors, inflation and workforce issues and things. Essentially, what the legislature did for transportation of those projects is we made some adjustments, but then we also deferred some decisions too. But all of those projects are still going forward because to pull them back and to rebid them later on or to delay them several years would have cost the state of Washington millions and millions of dollars more just for the same project. So in some ways, we addressed it in this budget. In other ways, we're punting some of those decisions until the next session, which will be the next two-year budget. But for Confluence Parkway, I'm grateful that the funding is secured. And I think that I know that $85 million will actually be spread out over the three budget cycles, which is actually 6 years because the state budget's on a two-year cycle. So the Confluence Parkway project is one of the very first projects in the 2022 and 2023 Move Ahead Washington package that's actually being constructed. The challenge, I think, with Confluence Parkway, like many projects throughout the state, is they're also experiencing cost escalations too. But I know that the city of Wenatchee is working closely with their contractor to try to realize some efficiencies and see if they're going to be able to deliver that project on schedule within the existing funding that has been provided. And if by chance they can't, well, then next session I stand ready to support
the city. So that's when they're
going
to come back to you and say, hey, the $85 million isn't going to cut it. Now we need more, or we need more infra grants.
Yeah, it's a city project. So I've been in close communications with new mayor Mike Poirier and the city administrator Laura Gloria. And I just want to make sure they know I'm fully supportive of helping Confluence Parkway get across the finish line. But they have not yet told me we're short on funds. But if they are, I stand ready to help them. But I think they're working through that process now of just trying to figure out, can they realize some efficiencies and within the scope and the parameters of the funding that they have to deliver the project on schedule for the funds that were provided. And if by chance they can't, well, then next year would be the year to take another little bite at the apple for Confluence Parkway, which is probably what we're going to do for some of these other projects in the state that have escalations.
All right, when we come back, and over the course of our hour, we're going to talk about an exciting option. You know, if you've had kids go through running start, now you're going to have a chance for kids to go do walking start. And we'll explain a little bit more about that. Plus, these six initiatives, three of them are going to, that were initiatives to the legislature, three of them become law within 90 days. Three others, though, gear up for the campaigns because they are going to the ballot in November. And the citizens have spoken. And so we'll get your thoughts on how that process went when we come back on the agenda. State Senator Brad Hawkins.
The Agenda is streaming on your smart speaker, the KPQ app, and kpq.com. You're listening to The Agenda on KPQ. To reach the studio, use the Chat With Us button on the KPQ app.
All right, a little legislative recap on the 12th District session. And State Senator Brad Hawkins from the 12th is a ranking member on the K-12 Education Committee. Also serves on higher ed and in transportation. So now we have a thing, we've heard of Running Start for years. How long has Running Start been around?
Since the early 1990s.
And you had to be in your senior year of high school to take Running Start. Am I correct about that?
Well, no, it's available to juniors or seniors.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now you started working on this last year with what's called Walking Start. So... maybe someday we'll have Crawling Start.
Yeah, so right.
Explain the Walking Start program that you got passed.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking, Dave. So the Running Start program is what's known as a dual credit opportunity where students in high school can earn credit in college while also earning credits for high school. So over time, they can either kind of chip away, and a lot of people, probably listeners, are familiar with the program, but they can kind of chip away at their college credits, or some students say, I want to participate in Running Start full time. And they, by the time they graduate from high school, they can also earn their AA 2-year college degree, which is awesome. So I've been working on a Running Start bill for a couple years, one that I first introduced last legislative session. But, the program's only available to juniors and seniors. So what my bill, Senate Bill 5670, would allow is for students who've completed their sophomore year but haven't yet started their junior year in the fall to earn up to 10 credits of Running Start during the summer. And I called it a Walking Start to Running Start because in life and in school, you kind of need to walk before you run. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to help ease students into the Running Start program, help them gain familiarity at the college campus, help them make friends, help them build success, and ultimately get them closer to degree attainment. And that's kind of the goal in our state. A lot of students sometimes go to college, they fall out, they never actually attain their degree. And what studies show is if for the students who do, they're able to you know, earn more and succeed in life. And so, you know, that reducing debt and all those things, I just felt like this was a big opportunity. And what I like about the Running Start program too, it's beneficial to all. But for the middle class families who don't otherwise qualify for any financial aid, this is really a great opportunity. And so a lot of the students that try to take on Running Start, I believe they start in the fall of their junior year, and fall's a busy time. Campus is full, some school sports that they may still be participating in at their high school. And then they're trying to take a full load in college, and they could be overwhelmed. And it's a shock to the system. So having the chance to chip away at one or two classes in the summer, if they want to, really could help them build success and then help them kind of ease into it. Because then in the fall, you wouldn't have to take a full load. And then you'd still be on track to get that two-year degree at the end of the process if you wanted to. So it's the first major expansion of the program in several years, and really excited about it. It was bipartisan support. I had to work very hard to get it across the finish line. The governor hasn't signed it yet, but I've been in close communications with the governor's office, and the staff is recommending approval. Because when you get a bill passed, that's just the legislative process. The governor is the chief executive, and you do need to make sure that the bill will be signed into law too, because the governor, with one strike of the pen, could veto your bill that you worked so hard on, went through the whole legislative process. So I definitely didn't want that. And I tried to get the governor to come to Wenatchee Valley College to sign it, but his schedule doesn't allow it, and I'll have to go to Olympia here in a couple weeks.
Let's talk about education funding in general. So you're a ranking member of K-12 education. We are going to talk about parental rights. That's going to be one of the citizens' initiatives that was passed and is moving into law, so some gains there for parents. But let's just talk, and you do have this new matching grant, improvement in matching grants for school districts that pass bonds. We talked about that already. Was there any other movement on helping to fund any K-12 education efforts in Olympia this short session?
Yeah, we did. We took a few steps forward. Now, the matching grants that we previously talked about, those are for facilities, so they're kind of school districts, helping them address some of their capital needs. On the operational side, we did take another step forward on special education funding this session. It was a modest step forward, but it follows what a bigger step that we took last session. So we took another step this year for helping school districts meet their special education needs, because that is a high cost in the state, and we are responsible for meeting that obligation. We're supposed to get more federal dollars than we do for special education needs, but the state did step in for that. Also, school districts have reported significant increases in what they call their material supplies and operating costs. And that is like utilities, insurance, some of these less glamorous things that you often don't hear about. But when we have our car insurance and homeowners insurance and our utilities and things on the rise, well, so do school districts. So they needed some support with that, along with some paraeducator staffing support. I think for me, I've been a little hesitant to just give school districts more money. On these cases, the case was well made, and I could understand that. But also, we need to keep in mind that the struggles that school districts have with their utilities and gasoline costs and things are the same challenges that every family across Washington State is also struggling with. And that's sometimes, unfortunately, a result of the policies that the legislature has approved. So there's a reason, there's like a correlation to some of these increases in school district costs. And I think school districts also should be more prudent with their dollars. So they're getting record funding from the state. They should keep more in reserves and be able to apportion it out as their costs increase in other areas. what I feel like a lot of school districts have done is invested so much, for example, in teacher salaries, which I know teachers appreciate, but then once you've spent those funds, you may not have the funds for other increases in other areas of your district.
Some of these things you were just mentioning, though, don't the M&Os or maintenance and operations levies cover those expenses?
Well, it could potentially cover increases, although the state is required to fund the basic education of the school districts. And the levies are really considered for enrichment purposes. Now, what school districts argue is that they have to rely on their levies to cover costs that the state won't cover, like special education or transportation. So the state has been really working hard to at least meet the basic education needs. But one of the challenges I have, which I know we've talked, I think we've dedicated a whole show to it, the school districts are expanding the scope of their responsibilities. There's a lot of needs in the community. There's a lot of needs among their student population. And I think for different reasons, for public expectations or school board members trying to have their school districts take on more things, or just because the state's pushing more things on them too. Like school districts are trying to be the kind of the providers of everything, and it's really increasing their costs. And I think they need to have a, frankly, an honest conversation with some of the wraparound service providers in the community about, you know, what's a school responsibility versus a community or a family responsibility. But besides that, the school districts have had a lot of insurance costs, utility cost increases and things, and we tried to sort of meet them halfway on that.
All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back with State Senator Brad Hawkins. There were six issues that were brought via the citizens' initiatives to the legislature. These are different than a lot of initiatives we're more familiar with that go directly to the ballot, typically in the fall. So we're going to talk about three things that are actually going to become law, and now the legislature dealt with those, and three others that are going to be coming up on the ballot this fall. And one of those, I know, came before your committee, mm-hmm. So joint committee that you're a part of. So we'll come back with that part of the conversation next with Brad Hawkins on The Agenda.
The Agenda is streaming on your smart speaker, the KPQ app, and kpq.com. You're listening to The Agenda on KPQ. To reach the studio, use the Chat With Us button on the KPQ app.
All right, we're visiting with State Senator Brad Hawkins, and let's dive in to the initiative, six citizens' initiatives to the legislature. And so the legislature either had to act, approve them so they'd become law, or take no action, they'd end up on the ballot. And so let's start with the one with parental rights, because that came through a joint committee that you're a part of.
Yeah, that was a big one. That was one of the three that passed related to parental rights in education. And some aspects of the initiative were already covered in law, but other aspects just sort of guaranteed access to information, curriculum materials, ability to opt out of comprehensive sex education elements and other things. And the way we conducted the hearing for that, it was actually the House Education Committee, which I used to serve on when I was in the House, and the Senate Education Committee. And we had a joint hearing for that and dedicated a full hour just to this initiative. And it was packed with testifiers, but it was run very orderly and fair. And I think most everybody who wanted to speak got a chance to testify. And then we took action a few days later, and then the initiative itself came before the full Senate. And what was interesting about these initiatives, you know, Dave, we talked about them a little bit. The citizens' initiatives, if they get enough signatures, can go directly to the ballot in November, which that's something a lot of people are kind of familiar with. I know Tim Eyman was pretty active with citizen initiatives for several years. But a lower threshold for votes or lower threshold for signatures are initiatives to the legislature. And all six of these different initiatives gathered the signatures necessary, and the Secretary of State certified them to the legislature. And then we just, I think all the time I've been in the legislature, 11 years or so now, maybe there's been one or two, but this year, in the whole time I've been there, but this year, six in 1 year. And it was really an interesting process. Legislators were trying to figure out what are the mechanics of these initiatives? How do they work? And then basically each of the initiatives were approved separately in the chamber. So we're accustomed to dealing with individual bills that have to pass one chamber and then go to the other. Like my Running Start bill, it started as a Senate bill and then it had to go through the whole House of Representatives in that process. And then it goes to the governor. Well, these initiatives go through the chamber separately and concurrently, and they don't have to be signed by the governor. That once the legislature approves them in 90 days, they take effect. And that was the case with this parental rights to education initiative, as well as the initiative to prohibit an income tax, and rolling back the police pursuits, which was a huge issue in the state of Washington for the last few years.
Well, without the citizens' initiatives to the legislature, do you think those three that go into effect in 90 days,
no,
that the legislature would have taken them up?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. In fact, I would argue that the reason the majority party took them up rather than just let all six go to the ballot in November, because they're probably concerned about a gigantic voter turnout this November if those three in particular are on the ballot. I mean, the police pursuits was so unpopular a few years ago when it passed. And if you recall, we've long had a standard for reasonable suspicion for law enforcement to engage in police pursuits. And that was rolled back and kind of elevated to a probable cause standard. And at the time that passed, we told everybody, this is going to be a problem. This is a public safety issue. We should not be doing this. Communities are going to have issue with it. And sure enough, law enforcement, like someone could steal a car and they just watch it be driven off. And the law enforcement could not engage in a pursuit according to the law. So the legislature came back and adjusted it a little bit. I don't know if you remember some of those changes last year. And I voted for those because something's better than nothing, but it was still a problem. And people in every community on both sides of the aisle, on both sides of the state, were upset about that. And also people don't like an income tax, and people support parental rights for education and feel like the schools have been sort of taking on a life of their own and kind of shutting out some of the parents. Not our schools. I think we have great communications with our school districts locally, but kind of the movement statewide on school issues and choice and some of those things. So those three initiatives were really popular. I think they saw the writing on the wall and definitely wanted to advance those to take them off the plate.
Yeah. We're talking to State Senator Brad Hawkins. Recap of the legislature. On the ballot, though, will be the dealing with the long-term care tax, so the Washington CARES. Mm-hmm. Now, is this going to be, you get to vote whether people have the ability to opt out or voting to scrub the entire thing?
Scrub the entire thing. It's a complete repeal of the program, and yeah, it's an up or down vote. And with these, with the long-term care initiative, with the Climate Commitment Act, which is the carbon tax and trade sort of system, and the capital gains tax, those were not modified by the legislature. The legislature this year, they approved the other three outright. And then these three, they did not offer any alternatives. So the only thing on the ballot this November will be repeal, 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 yes or no. And I think the supporters of those laws will probably argue the sky is going to fall and, we can't repeal these now because all the revenue is being intertwined already into the budgets, and you have to cut education, you have to cut transportation programs and these sort of things. So there's going to be a lot of scare tactics about those initiatives, but it will be a straight up, those three initiatives that remain will be on the ballot this November for a statewide vote, and it'll be an up or down vote, basically, shall it be repealed or not? And I'm sure groups on both sides are going to be spending a lot of money to try to make the case for how people should vote a certain way. But I think having the other three also on the ballot would have really jeopardized those, preserving those programs. And so they took those off the plate, and then they have those remaining three, which will be a big deal. And are at the heart of the affordability challenges. I mean, when your gas prices are increasing 40 to 50 cents a gallon, it doesn't just impact your price of gas. I mean, it does, and filling up in your travels, but it impacts your grocery bill and, you know, the cost at a restaurant and your shipments to your house and all these different trickle-down effects. So, you know, I support the environment. I want clean air, all those things. But families are being really challenged for several months as a result of some of these programs. And the long-term care program, to your first question, it's a very marginal benefit that won't last long. And before it was changed, it wasn't even portable across state lines. So young people could be paying into this out of their paycheck for years and years and years to get very little, if anything. And the options for long-term care, because it's an important issue, those are currently available in the private marketplace. So I think these remaining three are quite unpopular still, but there'll be a lot of messaging on both sides and people will get a chance to vote this November.
Well, you're giving people a chance to vote a tax out, and people's inclination often is to do that. However, with the climate tax, the long-term care tax, those were voted in.
Voted in by the majority of the legislature, which was dominated by one party. So I think that they weren't voted in by the people of the state of Washington. So giving the people a chance.
I mean, other taxes have been voted in.
Right.
And
right.
So people don't always just automatically vote a tax out. But in this case, there'll be three opportunities to do that.
Yeah. And I think obviously there's a lot of people that are struggling and will vote against the taxes. But maybe other people say, you know, this program, maybe they support the merits of the program and support having less greenhouse gas emissions, but the structure of this particular program was rushed and not developed right. So if it is rejected, then, you know, legislature could presumably modify something new going forward, but at least this would push the restart button.
Now, you said you voted no for the operating budget because you were concerned that perhaps if the carbon tax or climate act was voted out, there's a repeal of the capital gains tax is voted out, some of those revenues are going into some of these of these coffers. So that was part and parcel. That's going to be the argument to try and keep these in place.
Absolutely, and for me, part of my concern is we shouldn't be spending so much in our budget. And spending to the edge, we should be preserving it because when these get repealed, or if they do, it's going to blow a hole potentially in the budget, and we should hold some back. And I just feel generally that the state of Washington spends to the edge. You know, we encourage people and their families to save. We encourage school districts to have a healthy reserves. Many of them don't, but neither does the state of Washington. And we have a sales tax based economy largely. I mean, we do have this capital gains tax now, a small portion of the property tax, although property taxes are mostly local. So most of our state revenue comes in the form of sales tax. And when the economy flattens out, so do the state revenues. They don't flow into us. And so I think it would be very prudent to keep back more in reserves, and especially with these two initiatives on the ballot that feed into the operating budget, it would be wise to spend less. But, you know, we weren't able to get there, and so that's one of the reasons I voted against that particular budget.
So supporters of the Citizens Initiative, was it Restore Washington? I can't think of the group.
I think it's Let's Go Washington.
Let's Go Washington. Mm-hmm. Feeling like they went 3-for-6, and if they can get 1, 2, or 3 of these passed on the ballot in the fall, you know, might say, hey, we've batted at least 500 or better. Does that suggest we may see more citizens initiatives to the legislature, citizens initiatives to the legislature in the future?
I think so. This is what made this so interesting. And this is all based on like state constitutional thresholds and things. So those can't really easily be changed. But most of the effort was always to get initiatives to the ballot for the people in November. And it was really expensive to kind of pay your signature gatherers and confirm your signatures and get those verified by the Secretary of State. I mean, I don't pretend to know much about the initiative gathering, signature gathering process, but I know it's extensive and I know it's expensive. So going for a lower threshold that is more achievable and then forcing that issue before the legislature is an interesting strategy, and it definitely appears to have worked. The initiative sponsor was, I met him for the Parents' Bill of Rights. I guess he's not the initiative sponsor, but the funder, you know, the kind of the brainchild of all that. But I got a chance to talk to him, and he came into our caucus as well later that day. And it's very interesting. That really does change the political dynamics. And I think when we have our state that's one party has so much disproportional influence in the process, and then this is where you've seen the citizen pushback. So it's interesting. My hope is going forward, the legislature will be more balanced and will have more give and take. So coming around full circle in our interview to the capital budget, that's an example of where Republicans and Democrats are at the table together, working cooperatively to develop a budget that benefits all of Washington. And if we can be at the table too on transportation and operating, that'd be terrific. Now, last time a transportation package was developed, Central Washington was entirely left out with a donut hole. So I had to fight and get Confluence Parkway included with the help of City of Wenatchee and everybody. So we got that done, but it's not easy. So we need to be at the table. And I think this initiative was like a way to force that process.
And timing is everything. I think you need to, if supporters want to do that again, they need to do it when it's an election coming up in the House, at least every 2 years. So maybe again in 2026, I guess. But yeah, we might see that again. Yeah. All righty. How do people get in touch with your office? We're out of session now, so what's the best way to reach your office?
We're out of session, but we do work year-round for the people here, and it is very busy with follow-up meetings and appointments and constituent communications. But the best way is through my website, which is senatorbradhawkins.org. People can contact me there. They can view my past newsletters, news releases, and other information. But we have the legislative session that starts in January of 2025. So we'll be back at it next year, and we'll be looking at developing all three of the state's budgets, operating, transportation, and capital for the next 2 year period, 2025 to 2027. So we'll have big things, especially based on whatever happens with these initiatives, plus the cost escalations in transportation and other factors.
And there'll be a new governor.
And a new governor for sure.
There you go. All righty. Thanks for the update. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Always great to be with you, especially in studio. Thanks for having me.
All righty. State Senator Brad Hawkins, our guest on the agenda.